From the Art Center in downtown Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning, everyone. Just when you thought it was safe to turn on the radio again, we got the rough stuff for you. I want to mention that this show is being brought to you today by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, the Apex Arts Council. I want to give a quick shout-out to Radio In Vivo, my friend Ernie Hood, your link to the Triangle Science community. And also want to mention that on the 19th, one of my favorite bands, and Ernie's, is coming to the Carolina Theater. That will be Procol Harum. Also want to shout-out to the German national soccer team. As a German here, hey, guys, keep on doing it. I'm sure those guys aren't very happy across the... I think they're lucky to have stayed alive, personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
With some of what goes on at those games. We've got the pleasure of having an old friend back on the show here, Dr. Hatzi Nitoli. We're going to go into the romantic poets, Spanish and otherwise, me included somewhere in the work. Dr. Hatzi Nitoli, does this mean you're a doctor that just works on poets?
No, it means I have a PhD in Romance Languages and Literatures.
Aha, we got that. Okay.
And so I ran the gamut. The only romance language that I'm not very good in is French.
Interesting. You're very good with the Spanish. I know that. Mm-hmm. We did a show before. Mm-hmm. So what is going to be our collection of themes today?
Well, I thought because you are an old sea dog yourself, and I read your collection that I see over there.
Seafarers, yes.
I thought I would pick up after the Barocco, which we did the last
yes.
time. A continuation historically of the periods, but absolutely relevant today because the Romantics were total rebellious,
mm-hmm.
completely rebellious.
And they still are, speaking
yes.
for myself.
And I found a poem that I particularly like and I really enjoyed teaching. It was the Canción del Pirata, which...
Conscience of the Pirate? Is that
no, Canción, Song.
Canción,
of the Pirate.
Canción,
Canción
gotcha.
Del Pirata, which is... It incorporates sounds from the sea... And I think when you read the poem that you've selected, you're going to hear the same rhythm.
The pentameter, so to speak. Yes, yes, yes.
The meter.
That lulling aspect.
Well, some of it's lulling and some of it is let's haul up the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of pulling on well, what would you call the ropes? The
the laboring aspect,
yes.
Yeah.
On the sea, it's called a cable.
Thank you. I don't know.
It's
if they
also called the laboring element when you're pulling those things
which,
in.
Which glorifies the common man, which the Romantics yeah. were very much into, even
and often,
though they might have been called lord.
Right, that's true. And even though we have weights on most ships today to do certain
right.
things, back in those days the human body was the weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wooden ships and iron men, that was what it was all about.
That's
exactly.
Right.
So, a little recap of the Barroco. Remember, this was the period in Spanish... culture where they were beginning to develop a lot of vocabulary. They had Latinized syntax, which was a little bit like Yoda speak,
uh-huh, okay.
you know, from Star Wars.
Be quiet now. It's a wise man speaking. Yes.
Yeah, right. Wise man speak now. Quiet.
There we go.
But there was also a lot of formula. Everything was very controlled. Everything was very depersonalized. One spoke in third person or, you know, tempus fugit,
mm-hmm.
carpe diem. There was very little of the individual. So now with the Romantics, which is very typical.
It got a little closer, yes.
Yes. Well, a little closer. We practically threw the baby out with the bathwater and became absolutely, everything was thrown out. The idea of kings, the absolute right of kings was not appreciated because remember this is French Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
The English were getting
off with their heads.
Yeah, exactly. Like not off with their heads. It was vive la République, you
mm-hmm.
know. So which
let them eat cake.
Translated into off with
the
their
guillotine
heads.
Just comes to mind. Yes,
well, rightly so. Anyhow, so the liberté, égalité, and fraternité was the big. Motto, and it's ironic because this really inspired the Spaniards, except that they were busily rejecting Napoleon, who happened to be French, and
mm-hmm.
he marched into Spain and disrupted everything. And the Spaniards they resisted and they got rid of him. So, and you know your history, your European history, brothers are constantly fighting brothers and sons, their fathers. But the Romantics went from this controlled, very well planned out poetry into emotion over reason and subjectivity over objectivity. And there was also the mal du siècle, the mal des siglos, the end of the century malaise. We talk about that, you know, when you go from one century to the next. And so all of this was, it was almost as if I think of them as bipolar narcissists. Because
sound like fun.
It was El culto del yo, which we would call, and this is the cult of the self.
So all you bipolars out there, you've just been validated.
Yep.
Well, it was they became, I mean, suicide was rampant because it was glorious. So it was almost like turning everything upside down on its head. God, and when I say God, I mean the conventional religion, religious idea of God was just thrown out.
But little we actually know of him, yes.
Right. I mean, there was a sense of, well, I'd rather go to hell free than heaven enslaved. So their idea, and in this poem that I've chosen today, there's actually a line in there that identifies this rejection of this control, live and suffer now so that you can live in glory later. That was thrown out. It was live well now.
You know. Sort of reflects on capitalism, doesn't it?
Yes.
I hope there's some preachers listening out there.
I like these people.
But anyway, there is also a large element of escapism because the daily reality was not terribly nice. I mean, this is Europe fighting.
Pretty much a dark age.
Yeah, Europe fighting in its own, its front yard and its backyard. And so they were looking for complete freedom, which, if you remember, the class system didn't allow for much. They wanted immortality, which we all know after the Black Death is not.
I was just going to bring up plagues and pestilences.
Exactly. Yeah. That, and then the two things they most wanted was perfection and pure love. So these fellows, and they were primarily men, although there were women beginning to appear as poets. Well, I don't think we use that word in English anymore, but we definitely don't do it in Spanish. Anybody listening, do not use the word poetisa. It's very, very condescending.
Yeah. Explain that.
Well, it traditionally has been used by the canon to demean women's work.
Poetisa, which is the feminine
of poeta.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been kind of, well, you know, it'd be like saying little woman.
So it's a term that's been washed away.
I don't know that it's washed away, but it really was used pejoratively.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay, so
do not include that in your romantic poetry.
I will not. I mentioned this anti-religious emotion, but not anti-spiritual. It was it was the spit in the face.
I fit into that one.
Yeah, spit in the face of God and go to hell rather than give up personal freedom. But the authentic God was sought in nature, particularly hurricanes and violent storms. And there was nothing more glorious than standing on some high peak in the middle of a thunder and lightning and risking death. And this was glorious, you know.
Sounds very Germanic.
The adjectives that the Romantics use are amazing. Mm-hmm. They are extremely sensorial. They appeal to all the senses. They're very emotive. And then you also find what is called pathetic fallacy, which is nature reflecting man's emotions, which totally doesn't exist. Period after that says, hey, you know, nature is nature and we are ants. So it's very interesting.
It's time we got humble to that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's every way. So nationalism was a big factor. Politics were very important. And the reduction of class differences, now I'm speaking about Spain particularly, because of the French invasion by Napoleon, there was a ennobling of the common man. Because everybody had to fight against this invasion.
A certain bohemianism, yeah.
Elevating
the intellectual element, anyway.
Yes and no, because there's always been this sense of hidalgo, hijo de algo, a son of something in Spain. But there was even, there was at that time a king. And please don't ask me which one. It was Fernando somebody or other.
Just because you said that.
Right. I really cannot remember which one it was. Right. But he was an absolute monarch. And the Spanish were done with that. They were absolutely done with that.
It's the English that can't seem to let go.
Well, but they're not absolute.
Right.
You know.
Not anymore.
No.
It's more of a status symbol now.
Right.
The problem that happened was that there was a conflict between the open-minded, we would call them liberal thinkers, the young men, and they all fled, went to England, France, and Germany,
mm-hmm.
where they learned all of these lovely ideas about democracy and equality and great literary practices.
There comes the bohemianism
exactly.
I was talking about. Yep.
And Paris, of course, being
one. Of course,
one.
Yes.
Goethe, Lamartine, and George Lord Byron. But back at home, the old guard was still extremely powerful and extremely conservative. So when the young...
And extremely defensive.
Very much so. And so when the young men came back, there was a huge clash. And of course, the old guard said this was garbage that they were spouting out. And what they were spouting out was an apparent rejection of the old style. Now, what's interesting about Spanish and Hispanic poetry is that it never goes away. It just gets added on to.
Mm-hmm.
So the Barroco is alive and well, but it is... It's been modified. There's still this Latinate syntax.
I'm going to interrupt for just a moment just to let the listeners know we're going into the Romantic poets and so on. I've got Dr. Hatsi Nitoli here with me, historian Bob Crowley, who's going to add some literary element as we go, myself included, and of course Rocco on the board. I think let's go for a little musical interlude while we gather our thoughts here.
A little music.
Yes.
From the Art Center in Carver. This is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater, heard at 103.5 FM, WCOM. Thank you.
Look around you. One in four kids in the U.S. faces hunger. It's not always easy to see the signs, but in this land of plenty, there are kids who don't know where they'll get their next meal. Join Share Our Strength and take the pledge to end childhood hunger here in America by 2015. Learn how at nokidhungry.org. Their next meal could come from you.
Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 WCOM. Now back to Claudio.
And this is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater, brought to you today by the historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. And I'm being educated on The Romantic Poets by Dr. Hatsi Nitoli. So back to you.
Well, I thought it would be a good idea to turn to the poem itself. And rather than read the entire one, because it is in Spanish, I thought I'd take three typical stanzas and read it in Spanish and then explain a little bit how it reflects. The first stanza, let me just say this. Remember we said rebellion was the big deal. So they threw out the baby with the bathwater and they mixed all kind of meters together and all kind of different stanzic poetry, you know, maybe six syllables with how do you say this in English? Alejandrinos, Alexandrines, which were like 14 or 15 syllables, and they mixed them all together. But what Espronceda did in this particular poem, if you listen to it, you hear three different things. Number one, you hear the movement of the waves. And number two, you hear some stanzas that are totally scornful because they're almost like little sing-songy children's. And in those, he's putting something down, or in one, actually a lullaby to himself. And the third one reflects a sea shanty, the movement of the men pulling up the
ropes and the cables.
Hoisting the sails. But within that, the message is, I'm looking for my own God. I want my own liberty, and my kingdom is my ship. And so there's a mythologizing of the pirate. We all know pirates are pretty bloodthirsty, but we think of them. I mean, how many of you played as little boys and little girls with an eye patch and a sword?
Oh, yes.
and swinging from the yard arms and all that?
And I actually went to live the life for a decade, yes.
Yes. But they were nothing like that. They were pretty bloodthirsty.
Yes, they were.
They were nasty dudes.
And they still exist today, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They're still on those waters.
Yeah. So the first stanza, then, is the one that gives you the beautiful adjectives that describe nature and also the movement of the waves. So,
do we have a title?
La Canción del Pirata.
Which means?
The Song of the Pirate.
There we go.
La luna en el mar riela, en la lona gime el viento, y alza en blando movimiento olas de plata y azul. Y ve el capitán pirata cantando alegre en la popa, hacia un lado, al otro Europa, y allá a su frente Estambul. So it's just beautiful. It gives me escalofríos to say it.
Tell me what you just said to me.
Hmm?
Tell me what you just said to me.
Said to you Oh wow. All right.
Well, so give us some clue. I don't speak Spanish.
Right. He's talking.
I'm a chef. I speak spinach.
Goosebumps.
He speaks of the moon shining on the sea and I don't know particularly which one of the sails it is, but there's a sail, La Lona, which is sighing in the wind. And it raises its wings into the bland movement of the silver and blue waves. And here's the mythology. And the pirate captain sees singing happily on the popa, which I think is the poop deck. Asia to one side, Europe to the other, and in front of him, Istanbul. So this
boy, is he in trouble?
Well, exactly. We're right in the middle of the Mediterranean, but it's this idea of complete freedom because the poet incorporated the entire world except for South America and the American area. So then we move into something of scorn about the political situation. And I'm sitting here thinking, which one will I pick? And I think I'll take the one where he rejects all flags of all nations. And again, mythologizes the pirate because, and self-adulation because he compliments his own valor. So he says, and you'll notice, this is where it's a little sing-songy children's song. He says, y no hay playa sea cualquiera ni bandera de esplendor que no sienta mi derecho y de pecho a mi valor. Which is, he's scorning the idea of privateerism. If you remember privateerism, where nations said, okay, go out and pillage and plunder in our name, meaning whoever, king of England, France, Spain, mm-hmm. wherever. I think, what was his name? Raleigh. Our beloved Sir Walter Raleigh.
Yes.
Was a privateer. He was a pirate, for goodness sakes.
Oh, it's amazing how well political hands right. wove into that fabric.
Yeah, but he had permission.
Well, but from the British, not the Spanish.
Well, the British gave him permission to beat up the Spanish.
But he says here, there is no, there's no beach, be it, and not any flag of splendor that doesn't feel my right, meaning I claim the right to do what I do, and give heart to my valor. You know, it's like, I don't need a king to validate what I'm doing, and I don't bow before any flag. There's another stanza in here which is pretty cool where he says, even if I'm sentenced to death, I laugh, ha ha. And because if luck doesn't abandon me, the same one who condemned me, I will hang from the yardarm and maybe on his own ship. You know, so he's just very arrogant. Very
makes me
arrogant.
Wonder if the privateer today isn't the capitalist.
Yeah. Well, there
the attitude
you go.
Is quite similar, yeah.
There you go. There's there is a verse, it's actually the chorus, and when I was teaching this, I'd have the class read the chorus, and at first they were like, I don't like poetry, and I don't want to read it, but by the time we got through this, where they would come in with this chorus, comes in at regular intervals, they really got into it, and you, this is where you hear the men pulling.
Let me take a moment just to say a little something on poetry. Anyone out there thinking they don't like poetry, and God knows there are millions of them, if you've ever loved a song or enjoyed the beauty of a day and enjoyed metaphor on any level, you love poetry. If you listen to a guy singing your favorite song, he's singing in rhyme most of the time. So poetry is
absolutely.
It's pretty much the plankton out there, and we're the whales. So well, don't kid yourself. You love poetry.
Well, when we first, Claudio, when you and I first started talking about this, you know, we mentioned the fact that the only way we had to learn before we could write was through rhyme.
Mm-hmm. For the sake of memory.
Exactly.
Because it's easier to remember the rhyme.
Exactly. And we were talking a little bit earlier in the PSA, the public service announcement, that rap is poetry.
Absolutely.
We
street
not,
poetry.
We yes. might not like it, but it's there and it's poetic.
And there's something to love in all of it.
And there is absolute talent in it.
Yes.
Anyway, so the coro, the chorus, sums up pretty much everything espoused by the Romantics. It talks about individual freedom. It talks about a new idea of God. And it talks about, well, mostly yo, I, me, my, I am my.
Me, myself, and I, yes.
Me, myself, and I am the center of my mm-hmm. universe. So, and this one was the one that you do hear as if it were a sea shanty. Que es mi barco, mi tesoro, que es mi Dios, la libertad, mi ley, la fuerza y el viento, mi única patria, la mar. You hear me. Que es mi barco, mi tesoro, que es mi Dios, la libertad. And those were the three I chose. I could go on to more if you wanted.
Actually, what I'd like to do is put Bob Crowley on the spot with some rhyme he's committed to memory. Then we're going to go to some music, and I'm going to come back with a piece you asked me to deliver
yes.
today that goes further in explaining what Hatsy is talking about.
Well, which rhyme did you have in mind, or
oh,
doesn't matter?
Whatever wisecrack you want to come out with.
Whatever wisecrack. No. Well, I've got one. I think it's the one I told you about on the way up here. It's called The Beast.
Mm-hmm. This is one you actually wrote.
Long time ago.
We have the poet in the studio.
Back in my salad days.
Bring rocks.
On haunches of burnished bronze, it sits. With eyes that pierce to the soul, it looks. With destruction, its only thought, it thinks. for an unsuspecting moment, it waits. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to some happier thoughts in music.
You're tuned to 103.5 FM, WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Thanks for listening to our station.
Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
I'd like to tell you that your host Claudio is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and a master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Now back to Claudio.
And I would like to make a contribution to sort of elaborate poetically on what Dr. Hatsi Nitoli has been going on about all morning. This is a nautical piece I wrote some years ago on the belly of some ship I was working on, which is where most of my Seafarers collection was actually written, but this was written after I published the book. This is a piece I realized at the time that I had not written anything on piracy. So this is a considerably dark piece, but it has an interesting lesson of being a writer woven into it. It's called Nautical Fatigue. He stood the son of a weary sailor, a captain at the helm, fatigued by the scars of a turbulent voyage in a very unearthly realm. The night was as still as a lethal silence, summoning its prey, as they weighed in the anchor and loosed their moorings at Sea Dog's Quay. The journey that was to ensue bore hardships in its wake, and nary a seaman held e'er a clue aboard the captain's take. Ere I proceed from tedium to terror in this chronicle of maritime woes, I must reveal why I chose the appeal and to navigate with poetry and prose. From the rhyming and the rigging came the ballads of the bold, and the verse begat the shanty as the waters round them rolled. Now from many bouts of drinking rhyme to melody would spring, and the humour of an age is oft contained in what we sing. Mother Ocean has a motion that is measured to and fro, and a depth beyond leagues and fathoms to where only poets go. To make of metaphor a language, there can be no nobler choice than certain words evoked by rhythm, given heartbeat and a voice. With sails full set and a cargo delivered, she slashed like a whetted knife through the bay. 13 knots windward heeling, captain impassioned and steering from a strange and unsettling stay. He had sailed through the summers and winters of a highly successful career, though oft in abandon he would say quite at random, "What the hell am I still doing here?" He had sensed gloom and foreboding in this lengthy run, and felt like a prey in the sights of a gun. On this eve of All Hallows, while outskirting the shallows, with a first mate and crew settled in, a forlorn gull gave its night cry, while the moon, like a dead eye, mocked at all that was soon to begin. Was the loss of wind and power product of omen or hour, as the clock in the wheelhouse showed a minute past 3? He was lured by strange motions, neither ships nor the oceans, as he took hold of a rifle his concerns to free. It was wholly the fault of a tragic assault, when the captain's face bloodied the deck. In a drunken sway and stagger, his foe stooped to pull a dagger, and stabbed it harsh between his shoulder bone and neck. The crew was as such deserted, having never been alerted to the butchery already on the make. For they were boarded by dark terrors, consuming souls and blood and errors, leaving only tides of crimson on the captain's take. Ere they disembarked the schooner, a strange ritual commenced, as they gathered in a circle, 13 wide. Of these pirates, 3 were wenches, 2 a youngster and a boy, the others men of middle ages, demon-eyed. As they linked in eerie gestures of a satanic consent, giving thanks for their bloodletting and all murderous intent, there befell a strange momentum to their union on the bow, with a galley cook appearing from below. As rage ensued with apprehension, yielding yet another dark dimension to some ancient and macabre demonic vow, moon shadow bore outline of a coastline ahead, while sea breezes whispered a prayer for the dead. The schooner had been drifting since the massacre ensued, with a galleon at starboard, black flags beckoning the feud. You've meted out insanity, unmercilessly grand, and now the blood of 22 lies thick upon your hands. Spoke the cook and placed a cauldron with hiss and sizzle on the deck, whilst his anger drew a spirit which sought only ruin and wreck. They stood dumbfounded and transfixed, as if by some gothic spell. Then suddenly they ran amuck like gruesome hounds of hell. Then aiming with a seasoned eye, he ladle-dipped his liquid fry, and nary a soul was left to tell of the rage that burned in him so well. Perhaps he was somehow possessed of a view both stark and narrow, though he yielded well his dark duress and reduced them to their marrow. For there in wretched contortions lay a testament to devil's prey. Sentiment, bloodlust, and gore herein give whirl to metaphor. Suspense by nature of intrigue is best delivered without fatigue. To conjure mood mindful of place yields character a stronger face. Colour with essence and speckle with hue to navigate your realm more true. Amidst the bloody ruin and carnage, the cook heard a painful groan as he saw the wounded captain struggle to regain his own. He made swift of his assistance as he slid across the deck, where he saw a strange protrusion issuing from the captain's neck. Rest with God, my weary captain. 'Tis mere miracle you're alive, though perhaps 'tis darker humour we were chosen to survive. You're a brave man and a hero, said he, gurgling blood and spit, as the knife twixt neck and shoulder made a spectacle of it. It seems the blade has blocked your arteries, at least significantly so, as not to have your life flow from you, or to have your senses go. The captain crouched with sway and stagger, arching for the wheelhouse door, whilst the cook, without abandon, helped retrieve him from the floor. Once positioned at the ship's wheel, upon which he much relied, he brought her about to the horizon, which the moon had not belied. He gave some thought to wary regions of the devil and his legions, for there are lessons in the turning of the tide. When forlorn gull gives out its night cry, and the moon mocks like a dead eye, then be forewarned of lethal darknesses astride. So there he stood in anchored silence, all his depth now moored and thrust, salvaged by a sharp enigma that would some day turn to rust. Both men remained in weary gesture, summoned of a dark intrigue, while their souls sought resurrection from a nautical fatigue.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Let's have a little music after that.
Thank you. The world of science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, right here on WCOM LPFM.
You're listening to WCOM, the Triangle's premier innovative radio station. We broadcast something for everyone at 103.5 FM Community Radio for Carborough and Chapel Hill. Now back to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Just a quick note on that performance piece I just performed, Nautical Fatigue. That was written purely for the sake of exposing the dark side of piracy. I was not mythologizing, even though there were mythological aspects in the hero character. I wanted to write a piece that did not romanticize these bastards. Anyway, over to Bob Crowley.
Over to me. And you actually asked me to explain myself, I think.
Hey, well, that poem, The Beast, that you rendered, explain what inspired that.
Well, actually, I wrote that many, many years ago, standing on the steps of the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. And there were some people passing by, and one of them was, how do I say this gently, but particularly unattractive. And something said to me, oh, my God, what a beast. And
You said something earlier, beast face, or how did you refer to her?
Well, there was a woman in the group, and she was extremely hatchet face.
Hatchet face, there we go.
Yeah,
tell it like it is, boy.
Yeah, well, it popped into my mind that, you know, everybody has a bit of the beast inside them, waiting for that moment when you just drop your guard, you lose it all, and suddenly that beast is there. And it may only be a small thing, it may be a small embarrassment, but that's... it could also be a major problem, and that happens to everybody. So I wrote it down.
These are the things that bring out the beast in you. We understand.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You bring out the beast in me, Claudia.
Indeed. Well, Hatsy, go ahead and bring out the beast in me, darling.
I'm going to put the beast to sleep.
You're going to calm the tempest.
I will calm the tempest, which is ironic because this lullaby rejoices in the violence of nature. But it puts the...
I'm on nature's side.
It puts the pirate to sleep, the mythologized pirate, not your
yes,
dark
right.
pirate.
The swashbuckler might be more what the mythologized element is.
Who was the great swashbuckler in the 30s and 40s?
Errol Flynn?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Errol Flynn. So.
I actually chefed on a yacht called the Orianda, which was docked right next to the Scirocco, which was Errol Flynn's boat.
Basically, in English, it says, "And from the thunder to the violent song of the wind as it brays, I fall asleep, calmly rocked by the sea," which is like ugh in English, but in Spanish,
yes.
"Y del trueno al son violento y del viento al rebramar, yo me duermo sosegado, arrollado por el mar."
I want to talk like that when I grow up.
Isn't that pretty? And but you know, the words themselves have such a beautiful sound.
It is a beautiful sound, yeah.
But the images are so diametrically opposed.
So what we're really saying here is, if it's boring in English, find another language you can speak it in.
Exactly.
Even Russian is good.
I imagine.
Yes, just gotta.
Especially on top of a lot of vodka.
Oh yeah,
gets a little smoother, but yes.
Yep. We got to try Germanic poetry sometime.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more time, I got to hand it out to the Germans, man.
Well, Goethe.
Great going on soccer, guys.
Yeah, Goethe was very influential in Spanish poets.
I can see that.
There's a tremendous amount of German influence because the Visigoths were German.
True.
And
yeah.
They spread a lot of seed through Spain, yes. Literally and figuratively.
Indeed. Well, any other themes you want to pick on here? We've got about three, four more minutes to go before we roll tape.
Roll tape, eh? Well,
and, of course, this show, for anyone listening and interested in catching it at a later time, should be podcast by Ernie Hood within the next couple of days. That's right, Ernie, I mentioned your name. And, of course, his show is Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, a top show, in my opinion.
And a great show, absolutely, no question about it. So we'll send that out to Ernie.
Absolutely.
By the way, yesterday, did you celebrate Bastille Day yesterday?
I was at home, but I probably did on some subconscious level. I was walking around naked, if that counts.
Well, it's yesterday was also National Nude Day, so...
Okay, that's it. I tied them together.
Yep, sounds good.
Didn't realize I was doing it, but there I was.
Yeah. So the only other thing I have to leave you with is I post a quote on Facebook and various places every day. And the one today comes from our good pal Yogi Berra, who said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
And stop and pick it up. There's a knife somewhere. People throw too much crap out of the window.
Yeah, whatever that means. But
right. That's me dousing the poetry of the moment.
Yogi was always good for things like that. But and maybe I should do a retrospective of Yogi-isms for the Arts Council somehow and put it on the stage and so on.
Well, I'm going to let you bring us to a wrap. We've got about 2 more minutes left, Hatsy. Anything you'd like to close with? This is Dr. Hatsy Nitoli that we've had the pleasure of having all morning.
Thank you. Let me do the one last. I did the one that I wanted to close with, but I will do one that scorns death.
All right.
Which is, if I fall, what is life? Losing it, I give it. What do you put on the yugo? Well, I don't want to look at the footnotes, which says the yoke of a slave. I would much rather die as brave than is in the yoke of a slave. So, y si caigo, que es la vida? Por perdida ya la di, cuando el yugo del esclavo como un bravo sacudí.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to close with a very risque poem that we've got figured out here in the studio. Otherwise, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. I'd like to give a shout-out to a longtime friend of mine that I haven't seen in ages, Muskie Gates. He wrote this piece called Ode to a Fly. It's a story about a Greek philosopher wanting to come up with something profound, but somehow that's lacking him this particular day. So he climbs out onto this rock in the water, sits down with his notepad and pencil or whatever they had in those days, some scribing element, and he wants to wax poetic, but nothing's coming to him. And all the while, this fly is pestering him. So he decides to address the fly. O winged pest of past, present, and future, what meager thoughts does thy small brain nurture? Do you ever in your constant fleeting ponder the reason for your being? And the fly considers this for a moment, descends on his shoulder and goes, Dear sir, a fly's life is too short, you see, to bother with inventing a reason to be. So ponder away, if you must, with your wisdom and wit. We flies are just glad that the world's full of
shit. Hey, now, wait a minute. But easy, you know.
And that's it for the speakeasy. Thanks for tuning us in. Until next time, cheers.